We are here with Steve Ramsey of the band Satan and, of course, the band Skyclad. And, Steve, so you resurrected the band Satan, and talk about how the whole thing came together for everybody.
It came about a few years ago, 2004. We got together and we did the Wacken Festival in Germany. It's a big heavy metal festival. And we were asked to do the show, so we got together. And at that time, our drummer, Sean, from the original lineup, he was having problems with his knee, and he's had an operation since then. And he couldn't do the show, so it was the original lineup, less Sean, our drummer. We used Phil Brewis, the guy that was playing in Brian's band, Blitzkrieg, at the time. And he filled in on drums, and we did that show. And we didn't really think about doing anything else after that. And then a guy called Oliver from Keep It True Festival in Germany, he sort of hounded us for about 5 years to do a show. We booked one for him, and Graham had an accident and had split all his head open on it was actually on a Skyclad show, after a Skyclad show, and we had to cancel the show. And then from then on, he just hounded us every year, please do it, please do it, please do it. And we sort of said, look, no, we've got no plans to do this again, until Sean told Russ, the other guitarist, Russ Tippins, that he felt like he may be able to play again. So that was what sparked it off. And so Oliver at the Keep It True Festival in Germany, he persuaded us to do that, and we did that in, it was 2011. And we were so surprised by how well we went down at that show. And the kids, I mean, we did a signing session, and it just went on forever. We were signing their CDs and albums, and old albums and stuff, for about an hour and a half. You know, it was just crazy. And we didn't. And then when we did the show, we didn't realize how popular the music, the old music was, you know. And it was almost like we were more popular now than we were back then. Mm-hmm. And that sort of made us think about, like, well, God, we need to do this again, you know. So we had a talk about it, and we booked another couple of shows, and then it was like Russ came up with a couple of riffs and stuff, and yeah, let's try writing a couple of new songs and see what happens. And that's that was about this summer, and we'd recorded a couple of demos, and they sounded great. So we decided in the summer, let's do an album, and right on to now, it's finished. It's actually in the process of being mixed now in Italy by Dario Mollo, the guy that did the last two Skyclad albums. And it sounds fantastic, and we're really pleased with it.
It's always interesting because some bands, when they disband and they've only been around for maybe a 2 or 3 year span, maybe a couple albums, it's amazing just how much of a cult following many of these bands get. And Steve, did you expect the response that you received? And what kind of response did you receive?
No, it was ridiculous. We thought what it would be like is like a load of like over 40-year-olds, you know, like sort of going back to their past to come and see some shows. But we were surprised that it was all a load of young fans as well, a big mixture, but mainly young fans. And they knew every word, and the last gig we did in Belgium, there was just crazy stage diving and everything, you know. It was like, we didn't have anything like that, but back in 1983 when we were around, stage diving and stuff wasn't really happening then in England. And we had that later on with Skyclad and stuff, but to have that with Satan and the crowd, just been incredible. And everywhere we've been, we've played in Belgium, in Germany, in Holland, and in the UK, especially in the UK. We are certain we'd never performed like a decent show in England, because it was the apathy of the fans was just, at the time, was just because we weren't like the other heavy metal bands, you know, like Saxon and bands like that. We were trying to push the boundaries with the music a bit, you know. And at the time, people weren't getting it when we did it, and that's how we subsequently ended up changing the name to Blind Fury and had all those lineup changes and stuff, you know.
Well, I remember when Court in the Act was reissued, and this had been, I'd like to say, the late 90s. And I remember I had heard of the band. I was in this big kick where I was trying to discover all these obscure new wave of British heavy metal bands, and I remember buying that record. And comparing, comparing the Courtney Act to other bands at the time, even Iron Maiden, for that matter, I mean, it was such a unique record, and it just, there, many of these bands were not playing the type of stuff that you guys were playing. You guys are very unique, and you brought something to the table that was a lot different, and these are the memories that I have, because you're talking, this has to be 13, 14, 15 years ago now, but I still love that album. In fact, it's one of my favorite new wave of British heavy metal albums, and, you know, give me some thoughts and memories about the making of Courtney Act. And obviously with the lineup you have going on, but give me some thoughts and memories about making that record.
Well, what happened was, the crazy thing that happened was, we were trying to do shows in the UK and not getting anywhere, you know. And a guy called Andre Verhuizen, he runs, it was a big festival that they did in Eindhoven. And but at that time, he was like, we would have been about 17-year-old, and he was about 16, and he heard the first demo we'd done, the Kiss of Death single and stuff, and on the back of that, he got us over to do the Dynamo Club that he was kind of like a youth worker there, working with projects and stuff, and he had little heavy metal nights, and he would put bands on, and he actually brought us over to play a show in Eindhoven in Holland, which was, to us, was just fantastic, you know. And it was there that the boss from Roadrunner Records saw us and signed us straight away. So it was we sort of got a record deal in Holland with Buster doing one show. It was just crazy time. The record deal we signed was very poor. It wasn't a good deal. And Roadrunner came on to be a big label, but at the time they were just signing a lot of bands, and the advertising wasn't great and stuff like that. You know, you'd be on a page with 12 other albums and stuff like that. But we got the record deal, and obviously not a lot of money to record it. And we recorded it with a guy who used to do our live sound. And he mixed it, and he put too much bottom end in the track, so it wasn't possible to put it onto an LP. So it had to be remixed at Neat Studios in Newcastle, and it was a place where we were trying to avoid, because a lot of bands were coming out of there and all sounding the same, you know. And it ended up there. So the production, we weren't happy with the production at all at the time, and we never have been. But now people say that it has this character, because of the poor production, it has different characters, so it's one of those. At the time, we weren't happy with it. But we played the whole album live. The whole record was recorded live, and then the vocals were dubbed over the top. So basically, we just went into the studio. We were that well rehearsed, we just played the whole thing live. And I remember that. It took us about 2 weeks to do the album.
Now, it's interesting, because after the first Satan album, the band decided to go a little bit of a different direction, and the lineup changed. And then you guys changed your name to Blind Fury. And then, of course, after the whole Satan thing, too, you did the two Pariah albums, which I thought were very, very good records. And anyway, getting back to it, you ended up forming the band Blind Fury after the first Satan album. And talk about that. Talk about making that record. And talk about why you guys decided to change the band name.
Yeah. Well, after the first album, when we started gigging, we found that we wanted to change direction a little bit, and I don't know how it came about. We decided that we needed to fresh change and change the vocals. In hindsight, it was a bad move. Brian's not great. He's not great at doing like a tour, you know. Like after three or four gigs, he needs a rest, and at the time, we couldn't afford to go on tour and have every third or fourth day as a rest day, because you can't afford to sustain the band on the road like that. That was one of the reasons, and a couple of other things. Some of the reasons I can't even think what they were now. You know, it just seems like it was a mistake, and we knew straight away it was a mistake. We got Lou Taylor in on vocals, and he changed the band. He didn't want to be in a band called Satan. And at the time, we were having trouble being connected with death metal and all that, you know, and we weren't really like that. And so when he joined the band, he persuaded us that we needed a name change, And then when we came to do the album with him, it became a sort of star vehicle for him. You know, it's a bit more, it's sort of him doing his vocal acrobatics on the album rather than trying to be part of the band. And that's what we feel about the Ben Fury album.
Well, it's interesting because you then after Satan, you then formed the band Pariah, which I thought was very, very good. In fact, Blaze of Obscurity is one of my favorite albums that you had put out. Then, of course, I really liked that Unity album you put out back in 1997, 98, because I thought that was pretty cool. And talk about Pariah a little bit, and maybe talk about that album Unity that you had put out.
Well, when we finally came to our senses and got rid of Lou Taylor, then we advertised in the press. We were all living in London by now at the time, and we tried out a lot of different singers and then ended up with Mick Jackson on vocals. We went back to Satan and did an EP and an album, Suspended Sentence, and we did a tour in Germany, and by then the black metal and death metal was like a big thing, you know, and there was all these Norwegian bands burning churches down, and we were getting sort of connected with all them, and we did a show in a little town in Germany, and the mayor of the town protested that Satan were playing in his town, and we had a load of Christians outside the show like trying to stop the fans going into the venue, and I suppose a lot of the black metal and death metal bands would have liked that attention, but we didn't. So that's how the name changed again to Pariah, you know. And from then we went on to become a lot more technical and change. Or we used a lot of odd time, which we hadn't used before, and stuff like that. You know, and, made the albums. The final album, the Unity album, we were dropped by the label in '89. We were on Steam Hammer Records SPV, and they dropped us in '89. The Blaze of Obscurity album got great critical acclaim right across the whole world, but it didn't sell up to the quota that it needed to stay on Steam Hammer Records, so they dropped us, and at the time we were in the middle of writing and demoing a new album, and it was the final straw for Russ. He'd had enough, you know. So he said, right, but we're not going to try anymore. That's it. I'm sick of the music business. He actually had a couple of years where he hung up his guitar and didn't play. He was so pissed off with the whole scene, you know. Because we'd get, like, 10-star and 5-star record reviews, and then, you know, not getting anywhere was just getting very frustrating. The Unity album was already written. And later on, we decided just to instead of having it just in storage, let's record it, you know, let's make the record. And Alan Hunter, a good friend who was in Titan Dog, he did the vocal part, and that we released that album. And that album was actually, the drummer on the album was a drummer we had in the interim period between Andy Reid, who played on the first demos, and then Sean. We had this guy on the drums, and we got back with him, and he played the drums on the album.
Now, how would you compare the music of this newest Satan album compared to, say, the debut album? I mean, how would you compare both of those records?
What we tried to do, we're trying to look at it like maybe this would have been the album if we'd kept Brian in the band, kept the name, this would be the album that we would have played. So we've tried to put ourselves in the same position. So, like, musically, it's technically, obviously, it's good, you know, because the first album's technically good, the playing, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But we decided that we didn't, at the time, we wouldn't be playing any odd time stuff, so there's no odd time on the album. And there's little things like that, and we've tried to make a record that would have been the follow-up to Caught in the Act. So it doesn't, we haven't tried to use anything modern, or we've just tried to go back to the way we were when we were like 18 years old, you know, like when we made that album.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we've achieved it. We thought it was a big ask, but when we listen to it now, it's just really is that. It's raw, it's energetic, it's it all feels like it's been played too fast, like the first album. And it just has that energy, you know, and I think the fans are going to really love it. And production-wise, it just sounds fantastic. The guy that we used, we recorded in a little studio in Newcastle, but the guy's a great engineer. And then we've sent the tracks off to Dario Molo in Italy, and he's mixing it. And so we've already heard one track, and it sounds fantastic.
Well, I have to tell you, too, I really did like that last Skyclad album. I thought it sounded pretty good and really like the songs on it, but I also like the production on it quite a bit.
Dario did the last two, and obviously with the budget we have for the second album, we can't afford to go to Italy like we did with Skyclad on the last album. We actually flew over to Italy and recorded the whole thing with Dario. But the album before that, The Semblance of Normality, that was recorded in Newcastle and sent to Dario, and he mixed it, and it sounded great as well. So we've gone down that route, and it's really paid off.
Well, it's interesting because you guys came up during the whole new wave of British heavy metal thing that was going on, and that was just a huge, huge movement. I mean, that whole movement really did a lot for heavy metal as we know it today, because it was just one of the biggest movements in any genre of music. And what was it like for you to come up through that era, the new wave of British heavy metal era?
It was great. There was a lot of bands, you know, especially from where we come from Newcastle. You know, there was Raven, Venom, Tyson Dog, Adam Craft. There was lots and lots of bands all came from this area. So it was a big thing from where we live, you know. And when you used to play a show, it was more a load of guys coming down to see if you could deliver the goods rather than an audience, you know. It was just a load of musicians, and so that made it less fun. But I remember at the time, the kind of music we were listening to was just like Judas Priest and Rush and stuff like that. And I think a lot of the earlier bands, they would take their influences from different styles of music than we did. We started listening to a little bit of prog rock, like Rush, and then we got into different bands. And I think that's how we sound a little bit different, because we took a little bit of everything we were listening to. We just listened to everything, like, along with everyone else, listening to the Scorpions and UFO and Judas Priest and Black Sabbath. Then we took something from Rush, and we took bits and pieces from other things, you know.
That's great to hear. And in fact, my next question for you, because the more you talk about this new Satan album, the more I really want to check it out. And do you have an album title so far for this record?
Yeah, the songs are generally, the Satan songs are, we don't write anything about the devil or anything like that, you know. I think that's the part of the problem. When anyone sees the name of the band, they think that we're going to be singing all about the devil and shit like that, you know, and evil. But the whole idea that we had was that we'd write about the evil in the world. So a lot of the stuff's based on sort of politics and death and disasters and things that happen in the world that aren't really right, you know, and are bad. And that's where we come from. So the new album has a title, it's Life Sentence. Now everyone's saying to us, well, do you not think it sounds like Suspended Sentence? We said, yeah, but we're trying to think, we haven't made Suspended Sentence yet. You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
Like, this would be the second album. And also, we've tied it in, Brian wrote the lyrics, and part of it is, part of the song is about being tied to the band for like the 30 years that we've done, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So that's one of the songs. We have a lot of different titles. We have songs about, we've had 30 years of history now to choose from, you know, where we can pick things that happened in the news and stuff. And obviously 9/11 was a big thing that's happened in that time. So one of the songs on the album is our sort of look at what happened in 9/11 and stuff like that, you know. And trying to spot some of the good things that came out of it, like the heroism of some people and stuff like that, that came out of the whole tragedy. And that, like, the guy that surfed from the top of the building and stuff like that on the concrete. We've tried to pick bits of stuff like that out. And we've always written songs about, like, including with Pariah, about war, all the wars that are happening all over the world. So there's a couple of songs that go on that sort of journey, you know, and just generally sort of stuff like that. Yeah.
So this next question, obviously, you probably are going to be asked this quite a bit, but since you have this new record coming out, do you guys plan on doing any type of touring for it?
Touring, not touring. We're all in do different jobs and stuff, you know, and it's hard to get like a long time where we could actually go out and tour. So our plan is to do a lot of festivals, and we've already confirmed Sweden Rock. That's the really big festival in Sweden, and we're actually playing on the day that Rush are headlining it, which turned out to be a real bonus because we all get to see Rush as well, which are obviously one of our favourite bands. And all the other festivals, I think this year we may be, because the record comes out in April, we may have missed some of the bigger ones, but we've already been offered festivals in France, Belgium, Holland, Germany, and we're playing in Canada and Montreal as well at the end of August. So their territory is Canada. I've never been there with any band before. Mm-hmm. So that would be really great, you know.
Well, since I have you here, and I wanted to take the opportunity to ask, what's SkyClad doing right now? Are you guys working on anything? Do you guys have anything going on? Maybe talk about some current happenings with SkyClad.
Yeah, SkyClad, this year we've had a quiet year. Obviously, we've been doing the set and stuff and everything. But we're already nearly finished the material for a new album. So next year, the hope is that we get that done maybe in the summer. And we'll have a new album coming out towards the end of the year. And then we'll obviously be booking a lot of shows the year after.
Well, you know, the interesting thing about SkyClad is I really loved these last couple of records. And I know that Martin was a very big part of the band's sound. And I know some people weren't happy when he left. But I have to tell you, even though Martin isn't in the band anymore, I have to tell you, these last two records, I think Kevin Ridley has done a great job and singing, and you know, I think these last two records have been great for you guys.
It was a difficult thing when Martin left the band. A lot of people considered Martin as the band, which was not really true. You know, Martin's not a musician. He's a vocalist, and he's a great lyric writer and a poet, but he's not a musician. So he didn't write any of the music ever for SkyClad. And when he left the band, we were so disappointed. We didn't want to stop doing what we're doing because we love doing it, you know. Martin's main reason for leaving the band was financial. We lost the publishing deal, and then his big wages that he had weren't there anymore, you know. And he always said he did it for the love of it, but obviously not as much as we do.
Mm-hmm.
Because we wanted to keep the band going, so we did. And Kev was already there in the band. And it was like, well, Kev, do you find... We actually had a charity show booked when Martin left the band. We were going to have to cancel the show. And Kev said, well, I'll sing for the charity show, you know, so we don't have to cancel it. And he did. He sang the show, and it went down a great, went down a storm, you know.
So. Mm-hmm. Well, I have to tell you, like I said, Kevin Ridley, I think he's done a great job singing for SkyClad. He's done an excellent job, actually.
In some ways, it loses a little bit of aggression. But then in other ways, we're getting a lot more melody into the song, so it's, for us, it's been great. Kev's also a musician, so it's easier for me to communicate what I want to come from the music when I write stuff, you know, and then he's wrote some of the songs as well, and it's been good working like that, you know.
Well, you know, to me, when I listen to him sing, I get more of a, it sounds like a more of a traditional folk singer to me, and,
yeah,
you know,
yeah,
to me, I think that, you know, these last couple records, I thought, you know, I thought were very good. And, you know, the one thing about SkyClad that I've always loved is that you guys are very unique. And, you know, over the years, you know, if I go and listen to any of the records you guys have made, I mean, you know, some of the song structures are really different. And, you know, just when I examine things, because, you know, obviously I'm a musician myself, I listen to you guys, and every album you guys have put out has been unique. And, you know, sometimes bands can suffer from that because people don't know how to take it sometimes, if you know what I'm saying.
I think that's been my whole career. I think when we released the first Satan album, people didn't understand it, you know, and I think it's like all famous artists, you know, like Van Gogh and stuff, you know, it takes a long time for people to realize that they were actually producing something great because they didn't understand it when it first came. It's easy to sit down and write a song that you think is going to appeal to everyone, But it's more difficult to write something that you believe in and then try to get people to listen to it. You know, it's a different thing. And I think if you're motivated by financial gain, you can't really do that, you know. A lot of the best musicians in the world are jazz players, and there's no money in jazz, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So, that kind of thing.
You do it for the love of it, man. That's why I do it. And I'm
yeah, that's the whole point, yeah. And it doesn't really matter to us that if we go and play a gig in front of 100 people, if they're all having a great time,
mm-hmm.
and they know every lyric that you're playing, that's enough, you know.
Well,
why does it need to be 10,000?
Well, I have to say, for my last question for you, do you have any last words to say to the metal fans that are going to be checking out this interview on my show?
Yeah, I'd like to say that if you like Caught in the Act, I'm pretty sure you're going to like what we've produced for a new album. And I hope you all go out and download it for free.